You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Muller.
And this is Ken Muller. Welcome to our show, all about real estate with Ken and Jane. Jane, you're in the wrong seat.
I think I'm the right seat here because we're opposite each other.
Yeah, now we're opposite each other. We're opposites,
great.
Which is good. I don't have to turn my head.
But we are opposite.
Well, today the reason you're in the guest seat is because we have two guests with us, and one of them is a little bit taller than you, so your mic works better.
That's right.
We're going to talk about environmental issues in real estate. Environmental is a very integral part of any real estate transaction, whether it be residential and of course commercial. Most of this show is going to discuss commercial real estate applications, and we have with us as our guests today we have Rob Edgar and Cassidy Klink, both with Peak Environmental. And before I welcome them, I do want to say we appreciate all the contributions, sponsorships, and community support that Peak Environmental has shown to the East Brunswick and Middlesex County communities. So, guys, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Once again, before we start, right, I mean, it takes a whole tongue to raise a child. And with your company's support, I mean, all East Brunswick residents really appreciate it. Yeah, that's great work. Great work. So mm-hmm. proud of you.
We are proud to be part of East Brunswick.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you.
you're cleaning up the New Jersey one site at a time. As Jane always says, it's one house at a time. Exceeding your expectations, you guys are doing it with the environmental, which is awesome.
Including properties in East Brunswick. So
okay. Oh, right.
Very local contribution.
Not to name any sites or any clients, but
right.
That's great. Yeah.
That's good.
Just to start with, just give us your brief bios and what your role is with Peak. And
so as you said, I'm Cassidy Klink. I'm an associate with Peak Environmental. I've been in the environmental industry for about 20 years. I'm a professional geologist and a licensed site remediation professional. I have a BS in Earth Science from Kane University right here in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and a master's in environmental science from the University of Florida.
Oh, great. Very
fantastic.
Local. Yeah.
Local.
Yeah, local New Jersey. Yeah.
My name is Rob Edgar. I'm a managing principal at Peak Environmental. I've been in the industry about 32 years, I think, this December. I've worked on thousands of sites. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental science. I have two associate's degrees in biology and chemistry, and I have some master's level toxicology classes and background.
Right. Wow. She can tutor our daughter. Well, she already had biology. Now she got through chemistry. Otherwise, you would
talk about that after the show.
I tell you, that was tough for her. Tough.
Yeah, those were one of her challenging, but she survived. She did. Yeah. She did okay. But it was they were tough. But those are the science. So you guys are between the two of you, you have I think over 50 years of experience. If my math serves me correctly.
Yes, that's right. And gray hairs to prove it.
Not too many.
Ken doesn't have much gray hairs.
But I just don't have much hair.
Right.
It's a trade-off. You either get one or the other.
You rarely
have both, right? Yes. Lots of hair. And as you get older, that's the problem. So let's talk about the first topic we're going to cover is phase one environmental site assessments, known as phase ones. Let's talk about the importance of phase ones and when they apply and who should consider doing one. Then we'll get into all the specifics of what a phase one entails.
Sure. So a phase one environmental site assessment is the mechanism that satisfies the all appropriate inquiries requirement of CERCLA. CERCLA is the Superfund rule. And the reason someone would want to satisfy that requirement is to gain certain legal protections under federal law to be an innocent purchaser and get those innocent purchaser protections. So if you go through this phase one process and you don't identify something, and then later on it's identified, you've done your due diligence, you exercised the due diligence that was appropriate and expected at the time in accordance with what is an ASTM standard, an American Society of Testing Materials standard. It's E1527. And the most recent version of that standard was just a couple of years ago in 2021.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, way back when I've worn many hats. So I actually did phase ones when I did some environmental consulting. So I remember that standard very well. I still don't remember the number. Yeah. Doing the Sanborn maps and the aerials and then the site investigation and compiling the whole report. So yeah.
It gets ingrained in your brain, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the phase, so let's talk about the liability though. So if you do a phase one and you do it, you have a competent professional that does it, and later there is something that's discovered on the site that wasn't covered by the phase one. What is the implication, assuming the due diligence standard was done appropriately, let's say they find an abandoned, leaking underground storage tank that for some reason wasn't covered, yet the buyer hired the professionals and there was no indication or any inclination that there was a buried tank there. Would that buyer under the CERCLA protection, would they be afforded would they be absolved of any financial liability for cleaning up the leaking tank? Or
well, I think that the owner of real estate or commercial property who has an environmental issue on their site, they own that issue, right? But if they've gone through the due diligence process, and this is more a question that an environmental attorney would answer, but if they've gone through the proper and appropriate due diligence process with a good firm like Peak and a qualified environmental professional, then they would have protections, federal protections, probably from third party liabilities. Like if that tank was leaking and someone next door had a potable well or something like that and was being impacted by that contamination, then I think that property owner would have protections against those third party lawsuits.
That makes sense, right? So let's talk about the steps involved in a phase one. If you guys are hired to do one, how do you approach a phase one environmental site investigation?
So a phase one has four basic components, right? There's record reviews. So we're looking at, as you mentioned, sandborns. We're looking at historic aerials, basically historic records associated with the site. We look at environmental database reports. We look at municipal and other available local records for the site. We conduct a site inspection. That's kind of the second leg of the stool, where we visit the site. We look at the property in question, and we may look at surrounding sites. And that look at surrounding sites is something that distinguishes a phase one from something I think we'll talk about later, a preliminary assessment done in New Jersey. And then there are interviews. You're interviewing the owner of the property. You're interviewing tenants of the property. You may interview municipal officials if you're in person at the municipal building. And then when available, and they're not always available, you might also interview neighbors of that property.
Right, because neighbors can provide a good track record, even in some of your residential deals. Yes. They can provide you when you're looking about prior usage or whether there was an underground storage tank possibly at a residential house. You've interviewed neighbors that have lived there for 40, 50 years, and to the best of their recollection, they can say that it was always gas. So neighbors are a valuable source, especially if they've been around a long time.
Right. My neighbors.
Because those prior operators or owners might not be available to question as well. So those neighbors might be that valuable resource that you can't that you can actually get in front of.
Right. And I think the data that you guys get, if I recall correctly, a lot of the data that's given that you get from the record search will tell you like within a half mile or a mile or 2 mile radius or, if there's any reportable sites that have had environmental concerns, right, or remediation done. So that can be very useful, right, because you want to see how close those sites are to your subject site and see if that could, be an issue
with
somebody,
a
neighboring property potentially contaminating your property.
Yeah, for the residential site, right, ask the previous, ask a lot of other agents because I only been in the business 15 years. Some agent been the business 45 years. So they may heard. So a lot of time you don't have to make a mistake to learn. You can learn from other people experience. So we always, residential is always good. So any property, I will ask a few seasoned agent, have you ever heard that area? But, so sometimes if they first, all your tank shows there's no tank. But if I know their place have a tank, there's no record, put a tank, I would say, hang on a minute. There's something doesn't add up. So, once they said no tank and later they found a big tank. So because, you know, other agents said, sure, there's a tank, there should be a record. Because every time you put a tank, you need a permit. So, but yeah. But for your guys, probably the neighbors because, yeah.
Right. Some of these historical locations, the records just don't exist. So having those interviews can be that gap filler that you need.
Yes.
Right. And in terms of doing a phase one, do you guys recommend a phase one be done for any commercial property? Or what are your guidelines when if a client comes to you and asks you about, should I do a phase one? Is your what's your guidance for those clients that are buying?
We would always recommend that purchasers of real estate in New Jersey, primarily commercial industrial,
right.
Have a phase one performed so they could gain those innocent purchaser protections.
Yeah, and especially since you're buying an expensive piece of property, most likely, so the cost of a phase one, in comparison, it's just a worthwhile investment.
I always use the analogy, you know, if you're going to buy a house, you're going to have an engineer come in and make sure the roof isn't going to fall down. So, you know, in commercial real estate, you want to do a phase one to understand if there are and then quantify environmental liabilities associated with it. And if you're financing the purchase of that property, your lender is going to require that a phase one be performed. So there's a couple different layers of reasoning
there
to perform one.
Absolutely, right. And then if let's say you have a large piece of property that's primarily vacant land, let's say 6 acres or so, how do you guys approach the site, the physical site inspection? Because obviously it's harder. Would you usually visually walk the site to the extent practicable?
Yeah, we would always walk the site in scenarios like that. Sometimes there's portions of the site that just can't be, it depends on the time of year, right?
Sure.
But there's portions of the site that are overgrown and just can't be inspected to the degree you would normally want to. Mm-hmm. And in those instances, we inspect everything that we can, and we use aerial photography, and we rely more heavily on, you know, those nosy neighbors and historic maps and other, other data sources.
Yeah, those maps, those fire maps or the sandboard maps, as I refer to them as, they're pretty cool because they really tell you, they go back, I think, to usually the early 1900s or even prior, but that's pretty cool. You can really see the historical uses, even from a history perspective. It may not have any environmental impact, but you can see what the prior uses of that property were, if there was a farmhouse or there was, you know, if it was always vacant land. So that's important because you could have a piece of land that's vacant now that maybe 50 or 80 years ago had a farm on it, and there could be the potential for some, you know, contamination if there was any oil or leakage. Yeah.
Those maps are always they're full of surprises. Sometimes they're good surprises. More in our industry, we're often delivering bad news and they're bad surprises. But
that's right.
But as soon your guys gonna have AI help you. The AI can walk to the bushes and the areas and detect.
Well, it has to be.
Human don't come.
So you don't have to worry about ticks or any bugs mosquitoes or getting
just
your.
Send the machine.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, at least a camera with the little robot on it, right?
To take
a scope for you.
And to your point about a large piece of vacant property. One of our tools isn't AI, but we could use a drone to fly over the roof of a property that maybe is just deemed unsafe to get on, or a vacant property where we need to cover a very large area and just, you know, there's no way to have the manpower to do that.
Yes.
So I don't know. AI, I think AI is a long way off in terms of supplanting us.
But a drone.
I've never seen that kind of AI, right? A few months ago, we went to Edison for that sushi bar, right? The AI bring you Coke.
Oh, yeah. There's one place.
The robot comes
It's a little robot.
To you.
Yeah. And one of the. That's
amazing, right?
Yeah. My daughter want to go not because of a good sushi. It's because she never heard a robot bring you sushi.
Yeah, that is pretty.
Do you tip the robot?
You pat it on the.
The robot was a little too slow, so we had to take it from the belt ourselves.
Right, but it's trying, right? All right, with that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Attention all investors. A two-story fully leased medical building is for sale. Good cap rate with long-term stable tenants. Corner lot with approximately 30 car spots located on Route 33 in Neptune, just one block away from the Jersey Shore University Medical Center. For more details, please call Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448.
prime commercial property situated directly off Route 18 in East Brunswick is available for sale or lease. This exceptional two-story building features a fully updated interior with a bright and airy ambiance, creating an inviting atmosphere for businesses, with an opportunity to present your business to more than 50,000 passing vehicles per day. To find out more, contact Ken at 908-337-9448.
Impressive second-level office suite in excellent condition is available for lease. Approximately 2,400 square feet consists of private offices, conference rooms and kitchen, and private restrooms. Perfect for attorneys, accountants, or any office professional use. Situated in prime location on Route 130 in the Lake Farrington Plaza Business Park, in close proximity to major highways including Route 1, the New Jersey Turnpike, and Route 287. For more information, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448.
You are listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jay Muller on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to our show. We're joined today with by Rob Edgar and Cassidy Klink of Peak Environmental. And guys, before I forget, please give your contact information so any of our listeners out there can get in touch with you if they need phase one or any of the other best environmental services you guys provide.
So the best contact information for me is my cell phone number, 732-570-4577, or my email address, which is rob.edgar, E-D-G-A-R, at novagroupgbc.com.
Okay, great.
Or you can always call us at our office location, 732-326-1010, and leave a message. One of us will get back to you.
Yes. They're right here in Central Jersey, right in the East Brunswick, which is the center of the state.
That's right, center of New Jersey.
And they're good, yeah. Yes. And they're very supportive of our Chamber of Commerce, which is greatly appreciated.
And the township, yes.
So.
Glad for the designation. I always contend Central Jersey does exist.
And this is a Central Jersey radio station, so there's proof to it, yeah. So let's conclude on the phase ones. And so when you guys get all the data, you've done the physical site inspection, you've looked at the Sanborn, the fire maps, the aerial photos, the interviews, the OPRA requests, Open Public Records Act requests, because I'm sure you do that to get any municipal or state information available from the government files. So if you're going to have a conclusion or findings, rather, of the phase one, and you're either going to recommend that everything, you know, there could be completely no issues, there could be potential issues, or there could be, you know, more serious, really potential issues. So you want to talk about how you craft your findings report.
Sure. So, one of the things that the new standard, the 2021 standard, includes for the first time is kind of a roadmap to this conclusion, right? They talk about what a recognized environmental condition is. And the purpose of a phase one is to identify recognized environmental conditions. A recognized environmental condition is either a discharge. You see that a hazardous substance or a petroleum product has already discharged and impacted the environment. A likely scenario where that has occurred, or what's called the material threat of a discharge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a good example of a material threat is a dry cleaner. You know, you're not going to see the dry cleaning solvents that they use in the ground. Maybe you will, but that's very rare. Mm-hmm. But you just know, based upon what you know about dry cleaners, for example, that they use a very, very large volume of those solvents. And so while you don't see it, there's a material threat that some kind of release occurred. Mm-hmm. And this idea and this kind of definition of what a recognized environmental condition is, I always illustrate with like a glass of water or something like that. So a recognized environmental condition, if this is a hazardous substance and it's in the middle of a facility, mm-hmm. and it's secondarily contained, for example, mm-hmm. there's no evidence of a discharge, that's not a recognized environmental condition. It could be the most hazardous thing in the world, mm-hmm. but we wouldn't necessarily call it a wreck. If that's over here, and it's in a position where your mother would say, move your glass further into the table, it's about to fall over, that is a recognized environmental condition. There's the material threat that that's going to discharge and cause an environmental problem. So, you know, we have to take a really close look at what our findings are, our photographs, all the things you've mentioned, the components of a phase one, to kind of differentiate what is a wreck from what is not a wreck. And the world of what is not a wreck, you know, includes there's just nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
It includes something called a de minimis condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that de minimis condition could be a little stain, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you have no reason to believe impacted the environment, but clearly somebody spilled a drop or two of something.
And you have to document it for
and you
for
have
your,
to document that
for your protection and for, yeah, just
that's,
to document it.
That's not a de minimis condition is not a recognized environmental condition. It's not actionable, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may find that there was a discharge in the past and it was cleaned up to the satisfaction of whatever regulatory agency governs that area. That's called either a controlled recognized environmental condition, if somebody put a cap over it to clean it up, or it's a historic recognized environmental condition where somebody has given a letter that says you're done.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely cleaned up. So there's a lot of different things that we can say in our conclusion statement that range from there's nothing here to there were problems, but they were previously controlled, all the way to, you know, what the worst scenario, there is a recognized environmental condition and further action is warranted.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. And that leads us to when and if further action is warranted, that leads to our next topic, which I guess you guys want to talk about the phase two, or you want to talk about the PAR, preliminary assessment reports?
I'll talk about the phase two quickly,
and then we can jump in. So phase two, as I understand it, that's when you do the physical probing where, like you said, there's a recognized environmental condition, just like a doctor says something isn't right with your blood work, actually, that's not a good analogy because the blood work is already physical probing, but if you have symptoms and there's something not right, their doctor's going to take blood samples or urine samples or additional tests. So
right.
In this case, you guys are going to go in and do some probing, and it could be different types of probing, right, based on what the symptoms are for the property, right?
That's actually the perfect analogy, and that's the analogy I use all the time with my clients.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't know. We didn't
play. No, you hit the nail on the head there. So you see the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, there's something going on here, and you know, you come to the doctor and tell them there's something going on, and they have to take a test.
Sure.
That test is the analogy of a phase two, and in the environmental setting, that phase two can mean we do some kind of tightness test on an underground storage tank, for example, that contains hazardous substances or petroleum products to see if it leaked, or it could be installing borings into the ground to take soil samples to see did it leak or did it leak to a degree that exceeds the standards in the state that you're in. It could and often includes ground penetrating radar. You know, you can't see below the ground, but maybe there's a tank or something else there that's of concern, a septic system, buried drums. So we do this ground penetrating radar to identify whether those things are present. It could involve groundwater sampling. Is groundwater impacted? Groundwater, if it's impacted, carries the biggest price tag.
Because groundwater travels, it flows throughout
the flows. It leaves your property, impacts other people potentially. And then there's vapor testing that's oftentimes done to see whether or not there's some kind of impact to air below a slab or air, you know, in the worst case scenario, air above the slab that people are breathing.
Yeah. Now, do they still allow underground storage tanks that are single wall? I know with the gas stations, there was a mandated they had to be yanked and I guess replaced with double wall, right? But if you have a site that has something else underground that's not petroleum related, is that allowed to stay in its current condition with a single wall tank until it leaks, or does the state require some proactive moving, you know, to get it to yank it before it causes a problem?
Yeah, it's a great question. I usually term it, it's not usually the state that's going to tell you to remove it. It's usually the insurance carrier
is going to say,
hey, this, we're not really going to cover it, or your premium's going to go up by a lot if you keep this tank on site. So that a lot of the replacements I see are related to that, as opposed to the tank says, oh, just because of its construction, we want it out of the ground.
Because it's only a matter of time. Eventually, the single wall will leak, right? It's just with the elements and the corrosion and
depends on the install date too, because the quality of steel differed over time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
if you have a tank from like the 1970s, very frequently those tanks are full of holes if we see them now. But if something potentially earlier from the 50s or 60s, it might be fine still.
Oh, isn't that funny? Something the older the tanks are better, or they use the better steel or stronger quality, higher quality steel. Interesting. Yeah. So on the phase two, so then you covered all the different types of probing you could do.
Right.
And And then so you guys have geologists, or you have, based on the probing required, you have different specialties in your firm that can handle the wide variety of tests that are needed, right? You have geologists, hydrogeologists, all different types of professionals, right?
That's correct. Yeah, and our staff are trained. We are in central New Jersey. The majority of the work that we do is in the tri-state area. It's New Jersey and New York. And our staff are trained internally to conduct all of that sampling. So,
for a certain background and cross-train everyone on everything. That way, everyone has that same kind of experience to be able to go out to different sites and collect different kinds of samples.
Right. And again, the phase two is not the actual remediation. The phase two is just the sample and analysis collection, whether it be the soil borings, the tank tightness testing, the groundwater testing. You're just collecting samples and data, further data. And then I guess the next thing would be, if there is a remediation, then you would have to design a remedial action plan to remediate the contamination.
That's right. Yeah. We would quantify the risk oftentimes. So phase one is usually performed in a brownfield setting,
We're going to cover that next week when you come back for this show. We're going to talk about brownfields. Yeah.
So the next step, once you find something, is this a deal killer? Is this something environmental insurance could be used to cover? Is this something, what's the price tag associated with the delineation and remediation of this contamination? And sometimes a purchaser can stomach that and incorporate that into a deal. And sometimes it's a deal killer.
And what's the time involved too, right? The time element, how long before the remediation is going to be completed, right? Maybe the new purchaser wants to walk away from the property, but it's going to be a 5 or 10 year remediation plan.
Right.
So that's a big thing. Is this something that's reportable to NJDEP? If you discover it, if in the phase two, you guys discover a problem and say, the soil is contaminated with, is that something you have to report right away to NJDEP?
I think the simplest answer to that question is, if you're the owner of that commercial real estate, the obligation sits with you to do the reporting. Mm-hmm. A potential purchaser in a due diligence setting doesn't have that obligation. And generally we would put our findings in a letter to our client, the potential purchaser, and say we recommend that these findings be conveyed to the property owner so they can take the right steps and report it.
Got it. Right. And then once it is reported, would the DEP get involved in overseeing, or they would require certain follow-ups?
So the Department of Environmental Protection in New Jersey has deputized certain people that have the appropriate experience to conduct the remediation. And so the state would assign a spill number to it, and then it would be the obligation of the property owner to hire a licensed site remediation professional to step in, and then that deputized individual conduct the rest of the work and remediate the site.
Okay, cool. So they actually delegate to somebody like yourself, who's an LSRP, which is great. Yeah. Wow, we're almost out of time. The time went so fast today. Please, guys, share your contact information again with the listeners. So you want to go ahead?
So again, my name is Rob Edgar. We're with Peak Environmental, a Nova Group company. You can reach me at 732-570-4577 or rob.edgar@novagroupgbc.com.
And I'm Cassidy Klink. 732-379-0672. And my email address is Cassidy, cassidy.klink@novagroupgbc.com.
Well, thank you guys so much. I hope it was very enlightening. Jane, I hope you didn't get to say too much, but I hope you learned something, right, from the show.
It was very, very good.
And we didn't cover nearly enough what we need to cover. So we're going to have you guys come back next week for next week's show to continue talking about some additional environmental topics. Thank you again so much for being our guest. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of the weekend. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller, airing every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. For feedback and suggestions for future topics, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane@gmail.com or call 732-898-2266.